IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Hello and welcome back to IRS on the Road. We have been on the road between Park City and Salt Lake, Park City and Salt Lake, Park City and Salt Lake all week. We don't know where you are, but thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
It is beautiful in the mountains of Park City today. I mean, trying to describe looking out there, honey, it's just so gorgeous.
It is. Summer is about to end, hopefully, but because it's been hot and dry, and then this week we got deluged with rain. It was absolutely delightful to have some rain, wind. There was even a little flooding, but you never know what's going to be in there around the next corner.
And we're excited this evening, as we record today on a Friday, we're having a concert, a little concert at our house. And man, it's something that I can't think of anything I enjoy more. Well, the one thing I enjoy more is hearing you play your violin, honey, but I can't get that every day. And so we have to bring in outsiders because you won't always play for me.
Right. But we're going to enjoy some beautiful music tonight. We have a young man who is a fabulous violinist. I think he's only 18 or 19.
He just turned 19. He's a product of the Gifted School of Music right here in Salt Lake City, which produces, well, I guess they start with prodigies and they make them even better.
Right, something
and
like that.
And so many have gone to Juilliard and to other conservatories. And anyway, we're looking forward to it.
It's going to be wonderful. And we have had a crazy summer, but school's starting again. Yep. I don't know where you are, but I just talked to a young man who is going back to Ohio State to get his master's. And, you know, the elementary school kids are mostly in, and the high school kids, college kids are going back next week. It's back to school season.
It's back to school in August. I don't know why. And in Arizona, where a couple of our kids live, they started at the end of July. So what happened to summer? Between Memorial Day and Labor Day, no one should be in school. But then again,
I know, it's true. We're doing everything from preschool right up to medical school.
Well, we're pretty excited about our topic for today because it's the R's and the A's. It's about relationships and how they are more important ultimately than any achievements, the R's over the A's. And it's also posing the question, and we're going to be working with an article that just came out in Meridian Magazine. Any of you who are intrigued by what we say today may want to just put Meridian Magazine in your browser, or just go straight to LatterdaySaintMag.com, and you'll find on the cover this story, this article, this essay is really what it is, that we've worked on together. It's under my byline because Linda hasn't had time to do much typing.
Right.
But you've been helping a lot. And the title is Why Relationships Matter More Than Achievements. And then the subtitle, and is leaving ever the right answer? Now, some of you have been following us this summer, and you know we've been doing an article every weekend for the whole summer, and there's just two more left to go. This is number 10 out of 12. But for those of you that may not have been listening in every week, let us just read you the editor's note about this series to kind of give you an idea of where we're going.
As most Meridian readers know, we have, for five decades, Richard and I have focused our professional lives on strengthening families. This focus has ranged from writing New York Times number one best-selling books to speaking to parents in more than 60 countries around the globe. But their true position.
This is the key part. We want to share with you what the editor said is our true passion, and she's right.
Our true passion is for an inclusive, eternal family paradigm that can't be fully shared or grasped without the insight of the restored gospel. And they feel that the reverse of that is also true. The restored gospel can't be fully grasped or shared until it is seen through an inclusive, eternal family lens.
So the goal of this whole series is to try to better understand and have more realistic expectations of both our church and our families. And families is broadly defined so that each article tries to speak to everyone, whether we're single or married, whether we're parents or siblings, whether we're aunts or uncles or grandparents, the inclusive vision of a family, the eternal vision of a family, and how it factors in to the gospel.
And actually, also for those, whether you're inside or outside of the church, it is really something that we believe in. We have spent much of our time speaking to people who are not members of our church. We love them. We appreciate them.
And even not Christians.
And often not Christians, exactly.
But devoted in their own way.
And marvelous people with beautiful families. So we are not being exclusive here. We're just talking about specific things that we feel are so important for families.
So here's some questions to lead in. See what you think of these.
Surveys show that most of us rate our relationships as the most important thing in our lives, and that relationship with God and with family are the most valuable of all. But finding and forming and maintaining these relationships is hard in today's complex world. And to we who embrace the gospel have the perspective of a two-way eternity, forever back and forever forward. Relationships take on eternal significance and are essential to everything we do, from temple and genealogy work to missionary work and the cohesion of our wards and our neighborhoods. But the deepest significance now and forever lies really in our familiar relationships. Now, if before you turn this off, if your children hate you or you hate them.
Wait, there, you're the one we're writing to.
Yeah, exactly. There are always problems. We do not set ourselves up to be the perfect family because there's always some niggly thing going on with somebody in our family, and we know it must be the same with you.
In fact, that's the real question, honey. Are we asking ourselves the right questions about our relationships, and are we looking hard enough for those answers? So think about these questions. We don't suggest we're going to answer all of them in this half hour today, but these are the questions we're trying to deal with in this series.
The question is, are people and relationships always more important than the achievements and destinations?
Okay, let's alternate these questions. The second question, is it the job of our families to support our work and careers, or is it the other way around?
Can goals be set for relationships as well as for achievements?
When are we justified in leaving or abandoning a relationship?
Is leaving a marriage comparable to leaving the church? How do false expectations undermine both?
How serious is the mistake of leaving something we have not yet fully found?
Why can leaving in anticipation seem so right and in memory so wrong?
And does the key to a strong family relationship, a set of strong family relationship, lie in something very simple that the president of our church said that we're going to get to at the end of this broadcast? So we think we know the answer to a lot of these questions, but do we really? And we want to tell you a couple of stories. Well, let's tell this first one together, honey, even though it happened to me, but you were there. This is when we lived in England.
You take it from here.
Well, I'll tell it real briefly, and then you add some things to it. One night I was sitting, this is way back in the 70s, and we were young and we had young children. And one night the phone rang. We were running the mission in London for our church, and the phone rang, and it was, A man named Arthur Haycock, who's the secretary of the president of our church, and a kind of a self-depreciating, humorous, funny guy. And he said, "President Iyer, I know how busy you are, but President Kimball, the head of our church, is coming to London tomorrow, and we're just going to be there for a stopover before we head on to Europe. But I'm wondering if it would impose too much on you if we were to ask you to meet our flight at the airport." And of course, he was kidding. The honor of meeting the president of our church and being with him and taking him to his hotel was a great honor. And I'm like, okay, Arthur, I guess I could rearrange my schedule and meet your flight. Well, it was quite an experience that night because, for one thing, I sat there after I hung up the phone thinking, how can I, in just an hour or two with President Kimball, how can I somehow convey to him the British members of the church and how much reverence and how much respect and how much they love him? What can I do? And I had this goofy idea, which now I can't believe I actually did this, but remember, I was pretty young and impulsive, and I'm just trying to think of a way to make him feel comfortable when we take him to his hotel. And on an impulse, I picked up the phone and called a new friend we'd made in England, and quite an interesting guy, a man named Lord Grade, a member of the peerage of the House of Lords, a film impresario, the man who produced Chariots of Fire.
Jesus of Nazareth.
Yeah, an amazing guy. Well, but we were pretty friendly. We'd formed a nice relationship. And just on impulse, I called and said, "Lord Grade, the president of our church is coming in tomorrow night. I've just got this sort of ordinary car we drive around. I want to make him comfortable. Would it be possible to borrow your limousine tomorrow just to pick him up and get him to the hotel?" And I knew I'd kind of made a mistake when Lord Grade said, "Well, that'd be fine. I know about him. I know he's a great man. Which of my limos do you want to borrow?" And I'm like, wait a minute, what have I done? And he could tell I was a little flustered. He just said, don't worry, Richard. I'll send a nice one." Well, long story short, the next night, I thought I was seeing an eclipse. Suddenly, the light was blocked out. I couldn't see out the front window of the house, and it was because a 40-foot Rolls Royce had pulled up in front of the house. And I'm thinking, oh, boy, what have I done? Here's this very humble, unassuming, diminutive man, President Kimball, and I'm going to pick him up in this car, and he's going to ask me about the mission budget. But it was too late to change. So I got in the back of the car and we drove to Heathrow Airport. And this chauffeur just parked the car right in front of the entries, the main entry. I guess no one bothers a 40-foot Rolls Royce. And I got out, went in, went to the gate. That was in the days when you could go right to the gate.
That was so funny. Yeah.
And I waited and the flight was delayed and it was almost midnight and the flight finally came in and Arthur Haycock, the secretary, got off, and there was President Kimball carrying a briefcase, and the hasp was broken on it, and there were some papers poking out. I'm like, wow, that could be important. And before I could do anything, Arthur Haycock, this wonderful guy, dramatically sort of pulls off his own belt, wraps it around the briefcase, cinches it up, hands it back to President Kimball and says, "There you go." And President Kimball, 87 at the time, if I remember right, and tired and jet lagged, had the presence of mind to kind of wink at Arthur Haycock and say, "Why, thank you, Arthur, but are you sure we don't now have a more serious problem?" And I thought, wow. He's still got a sense of humor. Now, I tell you that part of the story mainly just for entertainment, but here's the essence of it. We walked out. The chauffeur was waiting there, opened the door, and President Kimball and Arthur Haycock got in the car and walked back to the back seat, this comfortable, luxurious back seat. They had to walk back to it and didn't say a word about the car. And I was a little relieved. I sat up in the front with the chauffeur and off we went down the motorway headed to the hotel. And I just breathed a sigh of relief that the car hadn't caused any commotion. But then, about halfway to the hotel, I heard a stirring in the back, and I looked. I was sitting on the passenger side of the front seat, and I looked back, and here was President Kimball walking up toward the front seat. And I thought, oh boy, here comes the question about the mission budget. But here's the thing. He didn't go to me. He walked up behind the chauffeur, put his hand on the young man with the uniform and the cap, put his hand on his shoulder and said, I'll never forget this. He said, young man, I'm sorry our flight was delayed. We're probably keeping you away from your family tonight and from your home, and I apologize. And there was something really genuine about that. And the man said thank you, and President Kimball walked back. And I spent the rest of that ride thinking to myself, here I am worrying about the impression I'm creating and the appearances and whether this was an appropriate thing to do and whether he'll be impressed and all these other things. And here's President Kimball, who's worried about a person, one person, a young man who's driving the car
And
and
his
who.
family.
And his family. And I just thought, wow, that's what matters to a prophet. That's what matters to a great person who cares about people. He's not interested in achievements or in accolades or in impressions, or he's interested in a person, someone he'd never met. And it was just pretty fantastic the way that
That
happened.
was amazing. It was an amazing night. And we could go on because he did. When he came out the door, there were 10 missionaries there
Just by chance.
just getting ready to get on different planes that had also been delayed. And that man just took 10 minutes and hugged each
Hugged
one
every
of
one of
those
them. It
missionaries.
was
It was
so
amazing.
touching. So as you can guess, we're going to talk the second half of the show today about why it's relationships, why it's people that really matter, especially within our families and within the church. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Welcome back to Iyer's on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back after that fun story. Wow, we'll just never forget that day. It was quite remarkable. And to think that that man is so focused on loving people, just loving people, no matter what they, where they're from or who they are, it was really a great experience.
So we're going to focus for a minute on what we call A's versus R's, achievements versus relationships. Not that they're both important, of course, but here's the problem.
Speaking of the world we live in, where recognition and accolade come from achievements, but real happiness and fulfillment come from relationships.
So one exercise that we do often when we're speaking to business or association groups is we just ask them, and it just only takes a minute. We pass out little pieces of paper and say, will you just write down your three main goals for the current year? And something very interesting happens.
So when we ask the group which is the most important, achievements or relationships, 80% of them say relationships.
And yet, when they turn in these little papers, which they do before we ask that question, basically 100% of the goals they've listed are achievement goals. They're goals like get the promotion or earn this much money or find myself in a corner office or whatever. And so we say, and this is a fun thing to do with an audience, we say, wait a minute. You all say, or most of you say, relationships are more important than achievements. Why are all your goals about relationships? And the interesting thing is there's a little confusion. People will say, well, how do you set a goal with a relationship, right?
Right.
I mean, I can measure my achievements and see if I made them, but how do you set a goal for a relationship? What do you say? I want a perfect marriage, so in 10 years, so I have to be 10% perfect this year. I mean, how do you quantify a relationship?
And that is the question. So, how do you do it?
Well, what we try to do with them, and we do it right in the meeting, and sometimes it's very interesting. We say, turn that piece of paper over and just write a description of the relationship you would like with one of your children or with your spouse. Pick out someone. Write a description of what you want that relationship to be 3 years from now. And you'd think that'd be something people could do, but so many will raise their hands and say, well, how do you? I don't want to do that. I'm not a writer. Well, don't worry. No one's going to read this but you. You're not going to turn these in. Just try to describe the relationship the way you want it to be. It's 2024 now. Put yourself in 2027. Describe this
And
relationship.
it's so interesting to think of their faces and how long they sit before they can even write anything because they've never been asked to describe a relationship before, or especially to describe what that relationship would you would like to have it be in 3 years. It is really it blows your mind when you think about it. We've done this with a lot of groups and we've done it with each other and with our children. It's pretty amazing once you have a mindset of what you want a relationship to be. Often it's just like a laser beam. I mean, even though there are rocky times that go and ups and downs that go on the way through, it is quite extraordinary. Even just writing it down and just thinking about it for a few minutes is quite
And
remarkable.
it's like any other, we try to explain and we try to keep this in mind ourselves that an R goal or an R goal, capital R goal, a relationship goal is the same as an A goal or achievement goal. It's just that the achievement goals are often quantitative. You can express them in numbers, while the achievement or the relationship goal is qualitative, and we have to try to describe it in words, but they serve the same purpose. They say, by this time in the future, this is what I want to have. And the stronger that goal is set, the more carefully it's written down. You said it right, Linda. It becomes a laser, it becomes a magnet, actually. And even subconsciously, you are pulling yourself all the time toward that goal. And we suggest people read over those relationship goals every month or so, maybe add to them, make them even more specific, and they go for it. Now, some people say, oh, I won't make it. I'm describing it too ideally, and I won't make it. It'll just be a testament to my failure. Well, any goal pushes you and stretches you. And any good goal gets you close, even if you don't exactly meet up in every way, at least you're moving in that direction.
So I think we're not saying that if you write a goal down, it's just going to happen because you do have to have some intermediate goals to make that happen.
Right.
And if, for example, if love is your main goal with this child or with a spouse,
Describe how you're going to do
one
it.
of our kids actually gave
How
me
would you manifest
a
it?
great idea, saying use the welcoming response every time they come in the door. Have a welcoming response that indicates, I love you. I'm so glad you're here. How are you? And really embrace that I love you concept. And then they start feeling that from you. And then it starts the wheels rolling and accomplishing these relationship goals. Obviously, a lot of them would be would involve how much feeling having that child feel that you really love them, you value them, that spouse, that neighbor, whatever the
Right.
relationship is. And there are ways you have to figure out to make that happen.
Now, for the last 10 minutes here, we want to get to something really sensitive, and we want to try to be careful how we say this, but some of you may be listening and saying, oh, that's great what the Iyers are saying, and we have a loving relationship. We just try to make it better by setting some relationship goals and so on. But what about if we're on the rocks? What about if we're considering a divorce? What about a child who's left home and doesn't speak to us anymore? What about really difficult relationships? Or what about a relationship with the church itself? What if we've been offended? What if we're pondering leaving the church? Or disassociating because we've got some questions no one's been able to answer. We've been treated poorly by our bishop or someone else in the church, and we're on the way out the door, either of our marriage or of our church or of a relationship with a child. What do we do? And we just want to share with you a metaphor that we really like. So listen to this little section of the article today.
Okay, this section is the overused option of leaving and why to stay on the porch instead. When relationships sour, the easiest resolution often appears to be leaving. And it's true at all levels, from friendship or business connections to our family and church associations. If the relationship is not what we wanted or what we'd envisioned or what we had hoped, the option to walk away is always there.
But that is usually not the best option, particularly not when it comes to the two most important relationships of marriage and church. It's usually when the leaving option is adopted quickly and impulsively, it is really a problem. Now, we're going to suggest some similarities between leaving a marriage and leaving the church, but we ought to begin with a way which they're very dissimilar. There are some marriages where serious abuse or other dramatic problems dictate that leaving is the correct course, and often the sooner the better.
And I have to say that I have a close family member in my extended family who whose daughter is going through the most horrendous divorce. Your brother also went through a difficult divorce. That had to happen. And we realize that there are situations where it's just so destructive, you need to get out.
But having said that, let's look at some of the ways that leaving a marriage or leaving the church kind of mirror each other. All of us, either with ourselves or with someone we love, have experienced this, just like you said, honey. But think about these five things. Let us read them to you one after the other. These are similarities of things we so often see happening in people who have left a marriage or who have left the church.
And sometimes have regrets.
Yeah.
First, remembering and longing for what we used to have and love.
We see that so often in people who've left too soon or too impulsively, realizing that the perfection we were looking for was unrealistic in the first place.
Which it always is,
Yeah.
actually. Understanding that we expected too much of the other and not enough of ourselves.
So common. Regretting the throwing away of the many years of investment and effort that we'd put into that marriage or put into that church.
Or even wishing that we hadn't been quite so hasty.
I think sometimes, Linda, our culture seems to breed kind of an all or nothing attitude. If the marriage isn't perfect, or if it's got these problems, and if we can't seem to get over them, we leave. Or if the church in some way offends us, or we find some doctrine that we didn't know about, or something in the history of the church that bothers us, we leave. It's sometimes tempting just to leave. But what we want to suggest, and maybe it's best to just read this part to you because we tried really hard to say this carefully. It's like you're on, well, let me just paraphrase it. When you leave abruptly, what do? Metaphorically, you go out and you slam the door, right? I
Right.
mean, in a figurative way, you walk away. You're gonna get out. I'm gonna get out of this marriage. I'm gonna get out of this church. We slam the door. The question is, and we all have times like that when we're angry or where we're upset or where we feel like the only thing we can do is leave. The question is, when you get out the door, do you have to leave the whole neighborhood? Do you have to leave town? Do you have to go away? Or can you, again, metaphorically, can you just stay on the porch for a while? Can you just relax a little? Think about it. Let some time pass. Not completely go away. Can you sort of hang in there and let some things evolve and maybe get some help and get some counseling and think about it. And I love that metaphor. You slammed the door, you went out, but you're on the porch. And think about that with the marriage, or think about it with leaving the church. There's no rush. Sit on the porch for a while, think it through, talk to some people. Don't do rash things that you can never undo. Again, in cases where there's not a compelling, abusive, dominating reason to leave.
Exactly. So I think so often people think they have to have it one way or the other, that they have to absolutely leave, get out of there, and break a lot of hearts and so on, but they have to do it, or just see what happens. But wow, I don't know. This is such a sticky subject, because we know so many who have endured marriages for so long that are just not improving. I just think that if you're struggling, get some counseling, whether it's leaving a marriage or leaving the church, really thinking about it, pondering, and before you make decisions is so important.
Here's one little sentence that kind of summarizes what we're suggesting here.
So whether it's with your marriage or with the church, when things get tough, resolve to spend a little time on the porch, or stay close, or stay where you can go back in. Don't give it up or throw it over, and you may thank yourself later.
Now, we want to end with a little thing that's personal, but it also shows how sometimes things need to be simplified. So we're just going to read you the last paragraph of the article here.
In some of our writing and much of our speaking about relationships, we've tried to suggest the triangular, three-pronged, 3P approach of perceiving our own nothingness and being humble, prioritizing family with abundant help from the church, and remembering the eternal perspective of where we came from and where we're trying to go.
So we've kind of preached that a lot, the three P's of perceiving our own nothingness or being humble, prioritizing family over achievements, and the perspective of the long range where we're trying to go. So we've written whole essays and developed detailed PowerPoint presentations on these three P's. And, you know, we've tried to teach it, but here's what's interesting.
It is only recently that we've realized that President Nelson, our prophet, is constantly teaching these same three things, only so much more powerfully and completely. And instead of all the words and explanations and metaphors and stories we've used, he said it in the profound simplicity of three crisp mantras he will always be remembered for.
Now, if you're a member of the same church we are, you'll recognize these, but think of these in light of these three P's. We're just realizing he said it perfectly in such a more powerful, brief way than we ever have. So Linda's going to read them, these little couplets, three of them, and then I'm going to just simply show that they're exactly what we've been trying to say all these years, only better.
Okay, so here we go. Let God prevail.
In other words, perceive our own nothingness and our own humility.
Family-centered, church-supported.
Perfect statement for prioritizing the family with abundant help from the church and from other sources, but the family prioritized.
And number three, and most recently, think celestial.
Remember the eternal perspective of where we came from and where we're trying to go. So our three P's of perceiving our humility, prioritizing our family, and having this long-range perspective, he's captured him in those three things. And so we'll leave you with this question. Would it be hyperbolic to say that all our relationships could be repaired and refined simply through living our prophet's three mantras? Let God prevail, family-centered, church-supported, and think celestial.
So we hope this has given you something to think about, whether you agree or not. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you so much, and we'll see you next time on Ayers on the Road. Bye-bye.